Have you ever seen a post or a picture on Facebook or other sites and said to yourself, I wouldn't have posted that? Well, what should you post? And what happens if you do? I'm Dan Ringer, and we'll talk about social media and employment right now on The Law Works.
From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Closed captioning for The Law Works is made possible by a grant from the Monongalia County Bar Association to support legal information and education for all West Virginians. The Law Works is made possible by major grants from the Office of the West Virginia Attorney General and from Software Systems Incorporated, a West Virginia company established in 1975, which provides high-end support services, programming, and consulting for county government AS400 mid-range computer systems, as well as PC-based systems, and by a grant from the West Virginia Bar Foundation. The West Virginia Bar Foundation, the philanthropic organization for West Virginia's legal profession and justice system, promoting public knowledge of the law in West Virginia.
Do you have a job? Do you want one? Are you active on social media? Well, we'd better talk about that. My guest is attorney David Morrison. David, thank you for joining us yet again.
It's always a pleasure, as I said before.
I want a job. I'm an applicant for a job at pretty much any company. I am active on social media. As an employer, what do you want to know? Where do you want to look? Where are you allowed to look?
Well, as an employer, I'm permitted to look in the public domain. So obviously you'll submit an application or a resume. I'll look at that. I'll check the references. But then most employers today, and I saw a statistic, I think it's over 70%, will look at social media sites. And if you have not protected your information and it's open to the public domain, it is fair game for an employer to look there. And quite frankly, an employer should, because there's something known as negligent hiring, and employers are getting sued these days if they do not do their due diligence and they look to see what's in an applicant's background. Let's assume an applicant has a violence in their background or some drug use, and you could see that on social media. It may not be in a criminal record, but you could see it on social media. Then that person engages in violence after he or she is hired, and hurt somebody, then whoever they hurt can sue the employer for negligent hiring. So it's part of the due diligence today.
That's scary, because most employers now, if you ask them for a reference on an applicant that is seeking a job with your company, will only confirm the fact that you were employed there once upon a time and the dates of the employment. They won't tell you why they were let go, why they're not there anymore, or how good a job they did or didn't do.
I normally recommend that if the reason for letting someone go was harassment or violence or theft, they really should state that to the employer that's inquiring. Because if you don't, believe it or not, there's something known as negligent referral. And if you don't provide that sort of information and someone is harmed because of it, you might get sued for not providing that information.
But then I, as the ex-employee, the applicant, comes back and says, you never proved that. You threatened me with it. I resigned because I didn't want to have to deal with that, and now I can't get a job because you're telling people I'm guilty of something that was never proven.
Well, I'm assuming in your question that it was proven. If it wasn't something that was proven, I would not recommend that the employer provide that information.
So don't do it on the basis of mere allegations.
That is correct. Accusations are made all the time that are incorrect or false, and you just don't make decisions on the basis of that without confirming the accuracy of it first.
But of course, that doesn't mean that you're not going to have somebody complain that you didn't point it out that I was violent.
Right.
Or you can't
right.
win.
Well, I mean, employers get sued all the time for everything. That's why there's so many of us lawyers around, Dan. But
there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
It sounds like a Chamber of Commerce advertisement of some sort, but still in all, it's true. We are a litigious society. Well, where are you allowed to look? You said if my information is public. If my information is private, can you not look at it then?
Well, that's an interesting issue. There are some states that now have statutes that say that employers cannot force an applicant in order to get a job to give the employer access to their private Facebook account or messages. West Virginia is silent on that. We don't have a case yet. There becomes an interest that the employer might have a need to know what's on Facebook versus the privacy interests of the employee. We do have a constitutional right to privacy in West Virginia, so there'll have to be a weighing of those two interests, and a decision will have to be made as to whether it constitutes an invasion of privacy to force an applicant to do that.
There is, there's almost a requirement for lawyers when somebody comes in with a complaint about something. If the law doesn't specifically speak to it, we have to kind of forecast what the law is going to be in the case. And I would think that if you are on, for example, Facebook, where you are allowed to restrict access to your information, if you have restricted the access, there would be a powerful argument to say you have a reasonable expectation of privacy in that restricted access material. However, if you grant me access to your Facebook page and then you put up some really scandalous or outrageous thing that you were involved in and I read it, and I say, boy, that's funny, I'm going to share that with my friends, and I click that little button that says share, all of a sudden your private information is now mine to distribute to whomever I wish.
So is there a reasonable expectation of privacy? Because
well, it's the argument.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm not sure you have a reasonable expectation of privacy. If you put it on Facebook, I tell my daughters who are in their 20s, don't put anything on Facebook that you don't want to see in the newspaper. I mean, it might as well be in the newspaper if it's on Facebook, even if you try to restrict access to it, because anybody you friend can then pass it on to somebody else. And so I'm not sure there's a great expectation of privacy, or there shouldn't be.
So the employer directly or indirectly sees these things. Can they rely on them? Can they act on them?
Sure. It depends. I mean, One danger that employers have in looking is that you get information on Facebook that you don't get in an application. For example, we're not permitted as an employer to ask how old somebody is. If somebody is, as you know, if someone is over the age of 40, employers cannot make a decision not to hire somebody because of their age if they're over 40. That's age discrimination. Well, that information might be on Facebook. So now the employer has access to information that the employer should not have had. So there's a danger for employers, too, in looking.
Because the presumption is, if you know about it, you relied on it.
At least there's an argument that can be made, and it can give rise to a lawsuit because of it. So employers also have some risk in looking. Some employers are actually hiring third-party reviewers to go into Facebook and these other places, look at these sorts of things, and only tell them non-controversial information, not about age, not about gender, not about race or anything like that, but only about what is on the Facebook that might show a person's personality.
Non-prohibited information.
Right, right.
We're talking about social media and employment. My guest is attorney David Morrison. I'm Dan Ringer, and this is The Law Works. I have seen things, particularly on Facebook, that seems to be the most popular of the social media sites, that if someone had said, should I post this, should I say this, my reaction would have been, no, good golly, no, don't even acknowledge thinking about something like that. And it's not just pictures, it's not just descriptions of where I went last night or where you went last night, although I see those. Young people particularly seem to like to post party pictures. There is never a party picture that serves you well if it's a real party. A wedding reception, you're standing there with the bride and the groom. That's okay.
Yeah.
But people get drunk and then do silly things, and sometimes directly at the activity, they take the picture with their smartphone and then press the upload to Facebook or whatever site it is button, and the world's got it.
You know, Dan, if I'm an employer looking at applications, and I have two applicants that are about equal, and I look on Facebook and I see that one has posted these party pictures that you're describing and the other one has not, I'm going to think one might have better judgment than the other. And I might make my final decision on the basis of that sort of thing.
Judgment is something every employer looks for.
Absolutely.
And it also comes up in the context of comments that people make on Facebook. I'm constantly seeing, well, I can give you an example. This happened just recently. A person posts a quote from Maya Angelou, or Angelou, that said basically, I dream of a time when white boys and black boys can hold hands and play together, or black children, white children. I don't remember the exact quote. People started taking exception to that. And it got, it devolved into, well, he's not my president. He might be your president, but he's not my president. Prospective employers will look at things like that and form an opinion of you and will react to that opinion when that's not at all what you wanted them to do when you made that post.
Well, I mean, that might indicate some sort of racist view. And most employers don't want to hire someone who can create those sorts of problems in the workplace. So it's so competitive. When you're looking for a job, it is so competitive. You don't want to put anything on Facebook or at the public domain or even what you consider to be private, because it then becomes public, that could harm your ability to find employment. You just don't want to do it, because if I'm an employer, I'm going to make a decision on the basis of the due diligence I've done. And if I have a choice, I'm going to take the person that doesn't appear to be racist.
It is true that you as an employee, whether you're designated to do it or not, represent the company. People that come into contact with you believe you to be the company. Even if you're the junior vice deputy assistant floor scrubber, you still represent the company in the contact with that person. And the employer wants to know what you're likely to do or say, in some cases even think.
Well, that's exactly right. It's interesting, though, along those lines, you know, there is something known as Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act. And Section 7 guarantees employees the right to collectively bargain, join a union or not to join a union. It also guarantees employees the right to talk together, engage in concerted action, dealing with terms and conditions of employment, wages, working conditions,
et cetera. I don't want my people comparing wages.
Well, they have a right under the National Labor Relations Act to do that. Most employers, I don't think, realize that, but they do have that right. Most employers, or many employers, will say, don't talk about your wages in the workplace. That's technically probably a violation of the National Labor Relations Act, because that's considered terms and conditions of employment. They're talking about it, discussing it amongst themselves, and that's what's guaranteed in Section 7. A lot of workplace policies dealing with the use of Twitter and email and all the technological uses today prohibit certain discussions on these sites. And some of those are that NLRB have found to be illegal because of Section 7.
So I can go on my Facebook page and call my supervisor an idiot?
Maybe. If it's a personal attack and it really doesn't have to do with the terms and conditions of employment, then that's a personal attack and that's probably not going to be protected by Section 7. It gets very, very complex, these analyses. If, however, you're calling that person an idiot because of the way that person has treated you in the workplace, given you discipline in the workplace, something to do with a term or a condition of employment, and you link the two together, then that's probably going to be protected under Section 7.
So if you're going to call your supervisor or your employee or your employer an idiot, you best explain why you're saying that.
Well, yeah, and although I would never recommend it, please understand, I don't think that's very smart. But it could be protected under the NLRA depending upon how it's used.
Well, that raises the next question, is why do you think that's not very smart to do that?
Well, it certainly doesn't advance camaraderie within the organization to be publicizing that your supervisor's an idiot. It also probably is not going to do well for you in advancement within the organization to make comments like that. So it's it's certainly not a good idea.
One of the things that I find myself oftentimes having to tell people is you don't want to stand out. You don't want to become an exception. You don't want to say, look at me, especially if it's in a negative context, because when they start to look at you, regardless of who it is, they're going to find flaws. And they're going to make judgments based on those flaws. They're going to take actions based on those flaws. Now, if you're outstanding or you become noticeable because of good works, that's okay. But if it's for some other reason, that's not so good.
Well, how many times have we heard it's better to listen than to speak? And this would be an example of that.
No one ever got fired for listening.
That's right.
I have, upon occasion, gone to some of my clients, employer clients, and I would meet an employee, and I say, I don't believe I know you. How long have you been here? And they say, 5 or 6 years. And they kind of sometimes will look hurt that I don't know who they are. I say, no, it's good that I don't know you. I'm the lawyer. If I know your name, that means somebody has brought you to the lawyer's attention, and that's never really a good thing.
That's exactly right.
Unless they're saying, how much can we pay them or what can we do for them? And that doesn't happen very often. The other danger with making comments about the terms and conditions of your employment is people change jobs.
That's true. And now it's out in the public domain that you've been critical of your employer or you've been critical of the supervisor. And again, you change jobs, you file an application for a new job, and the employer does his due diligence and looks and sees what you've been saying about others. May not inspire a lot of confidence in wanting to hire you.
Well, I just like to avoid all these policies or all these problems, so I want to craft a policy that says my employees just can't use social media. Just if you can work for me, but you can't use social media if you do.
Well, an employer actually had that policy, and the National Labor Relations Board held that it was a violation of Section 7 and the employer had committed an unfair labor practice because that policy had discouraged employees from having another medium where they could discuss the terms and conditions of employment. So the NLRB said, that's too broad. You can narrow it, but that's way too broad. You can't just prohibit any discussion at all on social media.
We're talking about social media and employment. My guest is attorney David Morrison. I'm Dan Ringer, and this is The Law Works. Well, another question that comes up is, can you tell your employees you can't bring your cell phone, your smartphone, your tablet into the workplace and use it during business hours?
It depends upon the circumstances.
It depends.
It's the lawyer's answer. There are certain companies, for example, that have trade secrets, and they don't want employees coming in and snapping pictures of how they do something, how they make some product, because it's very valuable information. So in order to protect that trade secret information, some employers have that sort of policy, and it's perfectly fine. If you don't have that sort of trade secret information, then prohibiting someone from bringing their iPhone in or their cell phone or whatever they're using, their BlackBerry, it may be a violation of Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act because it may prohibit employees from, again, having another means of communication to discuss the terms and conditions of employment. You can't always stand up and say something, but you might well text your friend that there's a problem here.
I would think that there'd be some problem with employees using these electronic devices, whether they're on Facebook or Pinterest or whatever it is, during business hours when they're supposed to be doing other things.
Well, and there's that argument. I mean, it can affect productivity. Again, you have to look at the specific circumstances. These analyses become very, very complex, and it takes some time to work through them sometimes. One of the problems with that employers face is employees harassing other employees using Facebook, and it all happens outside of work, so does the employer have a responsibility? And it the employer may, because it may affect work. It may create a hostile work environment.
Yeah, I could see a situation where employee A is mad at employee B, and they think employee B isn't doing what they're supposed to do or doing things or not, so they whip out their smartphone and take a picture of it or turn on a tape recorder and record what they're saying. And as an employer, I don't think I would want that to happen.
No, I mean, no, it certainly wouldn't add much again to the camaraderie. You know, my wife is a high school principal, and she has had to deal with issues of bullying using the Facebook and Twitter mediums, where a student will write something about another student and it goes viral. It may be true, it may not be true, but it's a way to bully. And you can do the same thing in the workplace. You can bully people or harass them using Facebook. And an employer may have to get involved in that.
So we're allowed to say, don't bring your cell phones in here, your smartphones or whatever, or at least don't use them during business hours?
Generally. And I use the word generally. You're permitted to say that because it affects productivity and so on. But if it's being selectively enforced, for example, and it's only being enforced against those who are pro-union, for example, that might be a problem. I mean, you have to look at the facts and circumstances of each case, but generally that's true.
Suppose I'm the business owner and I want to complain about a customer or an employee. Am I allowed to use social media to vent my spleen about those things?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure it's good for business. It could be defamatory. You may get into a defamation situation. But if you have a customer that's unruly and you want to vent your spleen on Facebook, I guess you could. I just don't know that it'd be very good for business to do it.
Can you criticize employees?
Well, then you get into invasion of privacy issues, because most of your personnel decisions are, and what happens on personnel issues, are private, and it should be only between the employee and the employer. So if you're an employer and you put out on Facebook that this particular employee is lousy and this is why, that could get into invasion of privacy problems at that point.
But the employee can criticize you as an employer.
That's because there's something known as Section 7, and they have that right to do. They have the right to be critical of the employer.
So it's a one-way street.
Well, it's... the employer has more power because they're the employer. That person employs the other, so that the employer has more power, and that's why the statute is written as it is.
Well, if I succeed in getting hired, despite what may be on my Facebook page, maybe my employer didn't see it, maybe she finds it later, can they take action against me for what I have said there if I'm employed already? Can I be disciplined for the things I say and do?
Well, I think there may be two questions there. One, if you discover later as an employer what someone said earlier on Facebook before that person was hired, it depends upon what was said. For example, let me give you a fairly extreme example. It's actually one I dealt with. An employee put on Facebook that he was pro-Nazi, and the employee and anti-Semitic. The employee goes to work in the human resources department of this particular company. They didn't realize it at first, but they're looking and they see that this person has made these anti-Semitic comments, pro-Nazi comments. You don't want somebody like that working in your human resources department. So that would probably be grounds to discharge the person, even though it was in the public domain earlier, you just didn't see it.
Explain what a human resources department typically is.
Human resources department is the department in the company that takes care of all the personnel issues, the hiring, usually making sure that progressive discipline is used before discharge, training on issues such as harassment, that sort of thing. They handle the personnel issues as they arise. So you don't want somebody who'd be anti-Semitic, for example, which would may not hire someone who's Jewish simply because that person's Jewish. That would be illegal. So you can't have someone in that position.
In the last few seconds that we have, there is a tendency to say, I want to have a happy workplace. And so the supervisor comes out and says, I want to be friends on Facebook with all my employees. Or the employees say, I want to be friends with all my supervisors. There's an advantage to that. Is that a good idea?
Well, it's dangerous because of what can be placed on Facebook. The language could be harassment language without intending it to be harassment because they're such good friends, you think. Now there's a record of what you said. There's harassment problems. There could be interference with Section 7 problems. I've talked about the Section 7 right to collaborate among the employees.
Sounds like it's not a good idea.
It's just not a good idea.
David Morrison, thank you, David, for being with us again.
Thank you.
Thank you also for being with us. On behalf of the Law Works, I'm Dan Ringer. Good evening.
If you would like to suggest a topic for a future The Law Works show, or if you're a school teacher and would like to receive a DVD of this show for classroom use, send us an email to thelawworks@comcast.net or visit us on Facebook. On the Law Works website at thelawworks.org, you'll find a listing of recent The Law Works programs, additional information about this show's topic, and video of this and recent shows. You can also find The Law Works programs on YouTube and iTunes.
The Law Works is produced in cooperation with the Office of the West Virginia Attorney General, the West Virginia Bar Foundation, the Mountain State Bar, the Monongalia County Bar Association, and the West Virginia University College of Law. The Law Works is made possible by major grants from the Office of the West Virginia Attorney General and from Software Systems Incorporated, a West Virginia company established in 1975, which provides high-end support services, programming, and consulting for county government AS400 mid-range computer systems, as well as PC-based systems, and by a grant from the West Virginia Bar Foundation. The West Virginia Bar Foundation, the philanthropic organization for West Virginia's legal profession and justice system, promoting public knowledge of the law in West Virginia. Additional support for the Law Works is provided by the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals.
From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.